Welcome to the Dirt Show, brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. And today I dug deep into the Dirt Show archives and pulled out my interview with multi-time Indy 500 winner Al Unser, part number one and part number two, and combined it into one long interview so you get to listen to the whole thing in one show. I will also be joined by Speed the Sauce Man from Cookies Barbecue Sauces and Seasonings. This is the final show of season 17. Enjoy the show, and we will look forward to talking to you in spring of 25.
BP Racing Fuels is proud to be recognized as a world leader in race fuel technology. BP's fuels have a well-deserved reputation for power and consistency, winning championships in every form of motorsports for more than 40 years. Whether sportsman or pro, methanol or gasoline, BP has a fuel to ensure optimum performance for your application. See the full line of BP's high-performance products online at vpracingfuels.com. At VP Racing Fuels, our passion is your performance.
When you need a trailer, you want selection, service, and someone who will be there after the sale. Zach's Sales and Service in Sherburn is this region's leader in quality trailers from H&H, Aluma, Mission, and Easy Hauler. Whether you need a utility enclosed, dump, flatbed, or tilt trailer, Zach's Sales and Service has over 300 trailers on the ground and ready for delivery today. Contact Zach's Sales and Service today at 507-764-2299 or see zackstrailersales.com, where service is right in their name.
Back in 1972, when Apollo 17 was landing on the moon, we were trying to clean up our planet. Hi, this is Jim Misgan from Misgan Auto Parts. Over the past 52 years, we've been recycling tons of steel, aluminum, tires, and batteries, plus salvaged thousands of quality motors, transmissions, and parts for reuse. If you have just one vehicle to recycle, or a whole field full, contact Misgan Auto Parts at 507-684-2100 or check us out at Misgan.com. Recycle we must, and in God we trust.
Partnering with hog and cattle producers throughout the United States, Altenburg Construction has 30 years of experience in the slat replacement business. Altenburg Construction also uses a custom wash bay to ensure biosecurity to protect your herd. Whether you need an entire site or a single slat, stop into one of their two locations in Louisville, Minnesota, or Ziering, Iowa. Call 888-435-2210 or see AltenburgConstruction.com.
Get more muscle for your money with Dixie Chopper Lawnmowers. We've been handcrafting the toughest and fastest zero-turn mowers for over 40 years. Dixie Chopper offers a full line of residential, commercial, and industrial mowers to meet every customer's needs. Visit your local Dixie Chopper dealer today or visit online at DixieChopper.com.
Shevland Enterprises, your locally owned and operated sanitation and recycling service, offers the highest quality garbage removal, trash pickup services, and roll-off dumpsters at great rates. Commercial, residential, construction, and industrial trash removal and recycling in Owatonna and the surrounding areas in Dodge and Steele counties. Contact Shevland Enterprises today, and new customers will get 6 months for the price of four. If you prepay, call 528-9900. That's 528-9900.
Bulldog Coatings, let Bulldog protect and restore your floors. Transform your old garage floor with the local family owned Bulldog Pros. Beautiful coatings, longevity, trust the experts, we make it so easy. Affordable solutions, you can't go wrong. See Bulldog Coatings, MN.com. Bulldog Coatings, let Bulldog protect and restore your floors.
Racers Cole and Kyron Anderson want to provide outstanding products for their customers at Anderson Enterprises. With their new 8-color screen printer, your t-shirts, sweatshirts, tank tops, and vests will stand out from the rest. Anderson Enterprises also provides embroidery on sweatshirts, jackets, beanies, baseball caps, blankets, and more. Besides apparel, they do racing wraps, signage, window decals, commercial wraps, banners, floor decals, and magnets. Contact Anderson Enterprises in La Center today at 507-351-9244 or AndersonEnterprises.net. Set yourself apart from the rest.
We can all think back to the first time we experienced real horsepower. Hi, this is Corey at Byers Engine Service. Whether it's that pin-you-in-the-seat feeling of a big-block Chevy, the roar of a healthy 340, or the joy of a perfectly tuned flathead, here at Byers Engine Service, we service them all. Strip to street, dirt track to asphalt, or just cruising the strip. Stop by and check us out at 2915 20th Street Southeast in Rochester, or call 507-282-5586.
Why choose powder coating over liquid paint finishes? Maximum durability. Extreme powder coating offers a scientific process that uses electricity and heat to bake the colorful finish deep into your product. Extreme can deliver media blasting, impact-resistant epoxy primers, and durable powder coat applications to meet your needs. Custom colors and exhaust coatings are available also. Visit ExtremePowderCoating.net for more information.
Welcome back to the driver's segment, and I am joined by four-time Indy 500 winner, Al Unser. And Al, growing up in the late 60s, early 70s, you had a major impact on my life. The Indy 500 was a huge deal at our house. Actually, at that time, any racing we could get on TV was a big deal. What are your earliest memories of being exposed to fast cars or racing?
Well, really, you know, my family was in racing, and when I finally became old enough, back in those days, the age limit was different than it is today. And I started in Albuquerque at like about 18, 17 years old, and went from there. And each step that I took or wanted to take seemed like I succeeded on it, so it made it really a great career. I love racing. I still do today. Like, you know, said earlier, if I could do it over again, I'd do it all the same way. There'd be some cars and teams I wouldn't go with, but we all have that.
Unser Mountain is what everyone knows to mean Pike's Peak. What a legacy your family has at that place. But I am sure your first few trips there weren't racing a car yourself. It was probably watching somebody else or horsing around as a kid.
Well, it was my brothers, watching my brothers and helping Bobby and Louie. You know, my father built the first car for the two of them, Louie and Bobby, and the Jaguar. Of course, Louie the first year finished third in the car. And then Bobby took it over thereafter and won several years with it. Pike's Peak was a place that used to carry a tremendous amount of prestige of being at and winning. And it opened up the doors for you to be able to go elsewhere and say, I have accomplished the race at Pike's Peak. And a lot of people knew it. And today, it's all paved, and it's quite a bit of different technology today than it used to be.
You began your racing career at the age of 18. Did you have to have your parents' consent? Because some states at that time you had to be 21 unless your parents consented to it.
Very much so. In fact, I went to Pike's Peak and ran all the practice days, which we used to be about 2 weeks, and did it all. And the day before qualifying, they came down to the garage where we kept the cars in Manitou Springs and told my father that I couldn't run because I was underage. Well, we did kind of fudge and try to get me about 3 years prior to that race and said I was a year older. Well, I wasn't, so they caught me, and yes, it used to be 21, and my father had to, in Albuquerque, had to sign releases when I started racing at the local track there, and of course at Pike's Peak, and everywhere else, you know, and today, you know, if you're 15 years old, you can run.
I have an article out of a 1962 USAC newsletter about brothers racing together. There is a photo of you and Bobby at the 1962 Colorado State Fair where you finished 1-2. You were also racing midgets against a pair of brothers at the Astrodome by the name of Bettenhausen. I never had a chance to interview Gary, but I had Merle on the show last year. What a great guy.
Oh, very much so. The Bettenhausens were very strong competitors, and they just like the answer. They loved racing. And Gary, we were teammates one year at Indianapolis. So, he was a very strong competitor. And to run against him, it was another team you had to outrun. And it wasn't easy. They had the talent and the desire just like we did. So to run against drivers like that in a young age, it made it very interesting how to run against them and try to beat them.
I have a great photo of you, your dad, who's wearing a Mobil Oil shirt, and your brother Bobby at the top of Pikes Peak in 1964. What were your hopes and dreams at that time? Had you thought of even racing at the Indy 500?
Well, very much so. In other words, all of the racing by that time was hopefully a car owner would look at you and give you the opportunity to go to Indianapolis. And it was a very difficult choice, you know, to be able to find the right car owners. And I was up there and that year in 64 and won the race that year. Then there was a driver up there who Bobby drove for. His name was Frank Arciero. And I asked Frank to be able to run his sports cars at the local California, Phoenix, everywhere, road courses. And he told me, he said, "Al, I only hire winners. I do not hire losers." So when I won the race that day, I went up to him and I said, "Mr. Arciero, I won the race today. Can I drive your car?" And he kind of looked at me and kind of laughed. And he says, "I'll give you a call next week." So he did. And that's how I got to Indianapolis, was through Pikes Peak, through knowing Frank Arciero and asking him for a ride. And then he was my owner that year, my first year in 1965 at Indianapolis. And we had a rough year. We went back there with a new car that we built, or they built, with a Maserati engine. And the Maserati engine was not strong enough to compete against the Alfies in those days. So, you know, it just was one of those deals that we kept blowing the engine trying to make it strong enough, and the engine just wasn't with the program. So consequently, I was parked the last day of qualifying. And I didn't have, I was out of cars and didn't know who I was going to get. And then A.J. Foyt walked in and said, "If you're interested in running my backup car, come over to my shop." Well, when he walked out, I walked out right behind him. And he put me in his car for 10 laps, and we were back in the garage, and he walked over to me and he says, "Well, we're going to go out and qualify. Are you ready?" Well, I couldn't even talk. I mean, I was scared to death. And here we go walking out. I don't even remember how I got out from the garage area to the pit gate out there, you know, at Indianapolis. So it, Pikes Peak, you know, opened up a whole new era for me.
Speaking of Offenhauser Motors, talk about the number 5 Vince Conzi Offie. Is there a better sound than an Offie engine pulling for all it's worth?
No, there isn't. Vince Conzi was in the aircraft business, machining business, and he built this car, and it only weighed 800 pounds. Fully loaded with fuel and everything for Pikes Peak, you know, and it was a 220 Offie, and I used to tell him, "Vince," I says, "why don't you put in a 255 Offie engine?" He says, "No," he says, "it's okay the way it is, Al." He says, "it's got plenty of power." Well, that thing would go up the straightaway and over 100 mile an hour, and it would just start bouncing around because it was so light. We didn't have any downforce and wings like they have today, and to make the car glued to the dirt like they do today. It all was, like you say, it was a sound all of its own, boy. It's a little four-cylinder off you used to scream at that altitude up there. That's 14,000 feet. And it was a handful, but yet, I didn't know the difference.
Pike's Peak, you and your brother Bobby knew every stone, every tree, every curve. When it came to racing in the fog, you knew where the race course was, but I can still imagine it had to be pretty unnerving even for the most confident driver to keep your foot in the throttle.
Well, that it was, but yet, if you're a race car driver, you have to, we knew the circumstances up there weather-wise that could go bad. We probably, Bobby and myself and Jerry and Louie, my two brothers, we all were probably sometime or another had to run in fog and snow up there, sometimes for that race it would be at the top of Pike's Peak and start snowing. And you just had to do it. You hope that you didn't get caught in that, but that's when you had to really know where you were at the given time on that road up there, because it was dirt and very tricky, and you had to know where you were at and give it all you had, but try to outrun your competition and hope that you were able to not make any mistakes and get to the top.
And I know a few years ago when I had Mario Andretti on the show, he said when he won it, that was it. He decided not to go back because he said he was pushing it for everything it was worth, and if he went back, he would probably go over the edge.
Oh, Mario was too good for that to happen. We all probably said that in many ways at different times at different racetracks. But Pike's Peak was just another track, and the year he won had Grant King build the car for up there, and I broke my leg at the speedway riding the motorcycle on the day of qualifying, first qualifying, so it knocked me out, and I got Mario to drive the car for Grant King, and he ended up winning the race, and Mario was a very capable man of being able to go up there, and even though he wasn't raised up there like the youngsters were, Mario knew where he was at, and he worked hard at it, and he made it happen. And, you can only say that he won the race, and he did a terrific job.
Back to your very first trip to the Indy 500 in 1965, what was that whole experience like the very first year for you as a young man? The travel across the United States, the sights, the anticipation, the whole experience had to be incredible.
Well, that it was. I was taking something on that I wasn't too sure if I was capable. You never know about your own ability until you get it done. Well, I hadn't done it yet, and then to be able to get the opportunity there to go back there and take a rookie test, I said, boy, I hope they at least pass me and let me take a test. And then they finally threw a lot of politics because they turned me down and told me to go home at first. And through my family, Roger Ward, and a couple of people, and McCluskey, they went to bat for me, and I'd run a couple of races on the dirt for USAC, and they said, how come he was good enough to run on the dirt and he's not good enough to come here? And they finally okayed it, and I was in Harlan Fingler's office. He was the head man at that time, and he says, you make one mistake, because he didn't want me there. He said I was inexperienced and too young. And he says, I'll send you home. Do you understand me? I says, yes, sir. And, of course, I passed my test. And then, I was, once you pass your test in those days, you were able to go out and try to get the car up to speed. Well, we came within about 3-4 mile an hour of being able to do that, and finally, you know, had to park the Maserati and go from there.
Your very first Indy 500 victory came in 1970, driving the number 2 Johnny Lightning car, one of the coolest cars in history, in my opinion, leading 190 of 200 laps, a dominating performance. After all these years, have you thought about how many great drivers tried and tried and never won, and you did?
Being with Bell and Parnelli Jones and the whole race team at that time, and we had everything put in the right place, and it showed that day by leading 190 laps of 200. And, you know, it just was a thrill to be able to, you know, I got the checkered flag, and I said, man, did I really win this race? Because you worked so hard to try to be competitive and try to win it and try to do as good as you can. You know, whether you win it or not, you finish fifth, you want to finish fourth. You finish fourth, you want to be third. You know, you just, there's always one place that you want, and that's the number one spot. And sure enough, I was able to pull that off, and the whole team, not just me, because I had a wonderful team. George Bignotti was my chief mechanic, and of course Bell and Parnelli Jones, being the car owners, were just, you know, they didn't back for anything. They, if it took a brand new set of tires, they just did it, you know, and a new engine, they came by it some way, and they had the budget to make it be number one, and that's what was so neat.
Your second victory came in 1971 in the number one Johnny Lightning car. How did that race differ from the 1970 race?
Well, the 70 race, we dominated that race. In other words, the car and myself, to lead 190 laps is unbelievable. And then to come back the next year, and they built a new car, and it was, the 70 car didn't hold enough fuel, and they had to put a side tank on the left side to carry enough fuel. And in those days, we carried 75 gallons of methanol. So it really made the cars not handle as well as you would like during the run, you know, from full load to empty load. And so consequently, the cars handled differently all day. And then in 71, we built a new car and made some changes to certain areas, and then made it big enough to hold 75 gallons, and we didn't have to run a side tank over there. And just again, we had to run hard that day. In other words, they had already caught that car and kind of passed us. Roger Penske's team, Mark Donahue, I mean, if he'd have finished, I couldn't have matched the McLaren car that year. But you first have to finish. There's to finish first. So there we were. And we ran hard all day, and that was a much harder race in 71 than in 70.
Last September, we visited the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum on our way to Eldora Speedway and looked at both your 70 and 71 winning cars sitting side by side. Many people may have thought they were the same car, but they were not. And I'm sure from a driver's standpoint, when you get in the car, they are drastically different.
Well, that they are. Every year, Indianapolis was a racetrack that seemed to change every day differently, from making the car handle to not handling, as we call it, you know, and it was a strange place. And so that car, the two cars were different, and tiny suspension changes that we thought would make the car faster and better. Well, it did in the long run, and sure enough, you know, we were able to win the race again in 71, and I thought, boy, this is neat. you know, to be able to win back-to-back. Wait till next year. We'll just show them again. Well, it didn't work out like that from thereafter for a long time.
The Yells Parnelli Jones Ford Race Team. What a team. How did that all come together?
Well, I was back there running, I think, tire testing one time with McNaughty, and George McNaughty said, I've been approached by Bell and Parnelli Jones about joining their team, you know, and becoming a main part of it. And I said, well, George, it's up to you. You know, it's not my decision, because he was the mechanic. He knew what we should do and what we shouldn't do. So, you know, we just ended up getting together, and of course, we did it in '69. And then that year, I broke my leg on the motorcycle and then ended up winning the race in 70 and 71. And, you know, we just went on, and we built a new car in 73. Mario Andretti joined the team, and Mario wanted Maurice Philippe, who was a race car designer, and he didn't design a good car in 72 and 73, and then we finally went to the different car in 74. But it's really strange how that all turns about. You know, back in those days, everybody designed their own car and did their own thing, engines and chassis. And today it's all computer-operated race cars, engines and chassis. They're all the same. So it's quite a bit different today.
I think the full-size dirt champ cars are some of the most beautiful racing machines ever built. The blue and yellow number 2 Johnny Lightning Champ car. What are your memories with that machine?
Well, now there's a race car that I love the dirt. Just like you said, to put a race car on a mild dirt track is very, very difficult to make it handle to start with. And with the team that I had at my disposal with George McNaughty and Mel and Parnelli Jones, George had Grant King build the car in the first year. We won a couple of races in 69 with it. And then we came back in 70 and won every dirt race there was that year. And it was just one of those satisfying deals. The dirt races are hard. Very difficult to run for 100 miles. You don't stop the fuel. You don't stop the rest. You don't do anything. And they're very hot inside the cockpit sitting in there because it's a front engine. And there wasn't any way to get rid of the heat from the engine itself and the exhaust and everything. But it really is a thrill. If I would have had my choice, I would have run all dirt all the time. I just loved it. That car and I got along very well, and we made it happen.
The white Viceroy Champ car and running with Mario. How did that team develop, and what are some of your memories from that era?
Well, when Mario joined the team in 72, the first thing he said, he says, I want one of those dirt cars with Al, because he was a true racer. Mario was, you know, you put him in anything, it didn't make any difference, and he's still like that today. You put him in a race car, whether it's a stock car, whether it's a midget, sprint car, champ dirt car, anything, he'll make it go fast. He was just one of those drivers that had that talent. And a whole team came together, and Mario says, I got to have one of those dirt cars, Val Parnelli. So they built him one. And so between the two of us, there's nobody ever beat us. You know, the next year, you know, it was he won or I won. Just made it a fantastic combination. Mario was a strong race car driver.
Brothers at Indy, was that an advantage or a disadvantage? I would imagine at a place with that kind of speed and danger, you definitely had some concerns about each other's safety.
Well, Bobby and I always were competitors towards one another. I mean, Bobby wouldn't give me any of his secrets, and I sure wouldn't give any of mine to him. but yet we had to be careful around each other because of the press and the spectators themselves. We didn't want to start having a family feud. So we was always very careful around each other, but being competitive against each other, boy, there wasn't anybody any stronger than Bobby and myself against each other, I'll guarantee you. He'd cheat if he could just outrun me.
That sounds like every typical brother in America.
That's right.
My perception of you was fast, methodical, and sized up your opponent, then struck. You were someone who seldom got themselves into a bad situation because to finish first, you have to first finish. Is this how you feel about yourself as a driver?
Well, I can look back and say yes. I don't know if at the time when you're talking about whether I really thought that, but I think I did. Because if you damage the car or mistreat the race car, you're not going to finish. They were highly horsepower motors, and you had to be careful with how you shifted them at Indianapolis, where you took care of the transmission. And on the dirt, you had to be careful of not over-revving the engine and things like that. So I think that you just had to be very careful of what you did. Yes.
The IROC series. Many young fans do not remember that series. I thought it was a great concept. Equal cars, equal drivers, different tracks, and see who wins. What are your thoughts on that series?
Well, I think it was a good series. In other words, you have to remember, to run against NASCAR, you're going to their tracks, their home, whatever you want to call it. You're running against the very best in NASCAR. Well, it makes it difficult. I wish they had just run dirt cars or Indy cars, then you'd have seen the difference, you know, of saying, well, there's some stock cars this week or the IROC cars and Indy cars next week. Well, it didn't work out like that. But it was a good series. Bobby won it, I won it, and my son won races in it in the series. It was a fun deal. I think really enjoyed it, at least I did, and I think 90% of the other drivers did too.
1987, your fourth win at the Indianapolis 500. Was that win the sweetest? Because you were hanging around that week without a ride, and you ended up in victory lane. How did that all play out?
That's a very deep subject, because I was going to run for Penske that year, and Roger hired Danny Ungaeff, or paid the money. Somebody did. Ted Fields, Danny's car owner at that time. And then after, Roger called me up and he says, Al, I've just been offered for the third car. He says, and I'm going to have to, I got to take it. It's going to help pay the bill. I says, well, I understand, Roger. He was always fair with me. And every race driver that ever has run for Roger Penske, he's fair with him. So when he let me go, then I probably had 10 to 15 rides offered to me. And once you win at Indianapolis, you think that you know basically what it takes. At least you hope you do. And that's the way I was. I turned down all these rides. And then when Danny Ungaeff crashed, and then later on the second weekend coming up of practice, they didn't release him. The medical staff at the Speedway didn't release him because they said he had a brain damage, you know. So anyway, they didn't release him. And then Roger called me and said, I got a third car. It's 86th March that Rick Mears run the year before. And he says, would you drive it? I said, Roger, yes. For you, yes. And that's the type of ride I was looking for. And those rides are hard to find at the Speedway. There's only three or four of them floating around. Good team. And you always want to be on that team because it betters your chances of winning. So we worked out a deal, and I end up winning the race, and Michael would have finished that year. I couldn't have beat Michael or Mariel. They were both very strong, but they didn't finish. They had car problems. Well, there it was. I'm running first, and Roberto Guerrero's running second, and he can't close in on me and end up winning the race. And I think that was one of those really self-satisfying deals because of the way it all came about, and end up winning the race. I started 23rd, I think it was. And you just don't start that far back in those days, and they're able to win a race. And I did it, and it really made a satisfying month of May.
Commentators. Wow, there are some great ones. Chris Economaki, Kurt Gowdy, and my favorite, Jackie Stewart. What are some of your favorite media or off-track stories hanging out with those guys?
Oh, my gosh. They all had a method of way of asking you questions when you won the race, and very seldom they ever came over when you lost. It was always you had to win to get these guys to come over and talk to you and do an interview with you. And it was just an honor to be able to face them. And they, in their world of commentating, are the best. So consequently, you're all of a sudden, both of you, because you've won the race that day, you're the best there is. And you have to be careful and listen to what they say because you don't want to make a mistake in answering them.
You make a mistake, they'll jump all over you.
Yes, they do. They would, yes. You know, that's just the facts of, I guess, being a commentary, you know, person. I couldn't have done it. I would have probably popped off the wrong question, and then I'd had to fight my way out.
The Unser Museum. Here on the show, I always encourage listeners to take a racing vacation, especially when we have a few feet of snow on the ground. Head to a track or a museum they have never seen before. What can fans expect when they head to the Unser Museum?
Well, we think that, you know, with the race cars that are there, we cover everything. Motorcycles, we didn't race motorcycles, but the museum has motorcycles in it, has midgets, has every type of car, NASCAR cars in there, Earnhardt's cars, Earnhardt Jr. We think it's a beautiful museum. Bobby doesn't really like our museum. Here we go on brothers again. He didn't think it was big enough or nice enough. Well, everybody seems to think it is but him. But he says, that's your brother. And he still comes down and looks at it, so he must think it's nice, too. So I just laugh at it.
Biggest win of all your many accomplishments, is there one that really stands out?
Well, I think it would be the 87 race in Annapolis when I won the last one. I mean, it's just so gratifying to have everything that went on that month, having a ride, not having a ride, and then ended up with the guy that you really think has the ability to win the race with you. It's just, you know, the 87 race. You know, when you pick the dirt car races, I love the dirt, even though it didn't carry the prestige and the money of winning as the Indianapolis Motor Speedway does. I think every race that you enter, and you're able to win, you have that self-satisfaction of doing something that the rest couldn't do that day. So it makes it worthwhile. There's some more important ones, yes. Indianapolis is still the greatest spectacle in racing. And that's the one, if you're really going to pick, that's the one you want to win. That brings you the most prestige. It's like yourself. You don't say, well, how did you do it? How did you do it in Milwaukee, Wisconsin? You say, how did you do the Indianapolis Motor Speedway? I get asked that all the time now. Did you win Indianapolis? Well, yes, a couple of times. But it's self-satisfying to be able to say that you've won the greatest spectacle in racing.
your favorite driver. Every fan and driver has someone that they have always admired for their skill or because of who they are or what they stood for on and off the track. Who is that special driver for you?
Oh, my gosh. You're asking a question that there's so many. In other words, any given day, you take like Foyt, Parnelli Jones, Jim Herterbees, Jim McElreath, guys, you know, that are capable of winning, and all of them didn't win. And you say, why didn't Jim Herterbees win? And you don't really know why, you know, or Jim McElreath. There was a man that won dirt races and sprint cars and championship dirt cars, but at the speedway, he always came close. Lloyd Ruby, there was a man that should have won Indianapolis probably 3 or 4 times and never did. And you say, why? You know, what happened? And there's not an answer. You just don't, you can't pick it. It wasn't his day, wasn't his time, or whatever. And then all the drivers that's been hurt and injured there. And, you know, you say, well, why did that guy crash? Well, the car broke or he broke, whatever. You don't have a good enough reason of being able to say, well, he has the ability, but he just, it just didn't happen. And that's just what happened back there. It's a funny place, and then when you're able to win it once, you know, and then you end up winning it 4 times, you ask yourself, what makes you different than the other guys? And you can't answer that. I can't. I was luckier, you can say. I had the right team, you can say. You know, there's all kinds of ways of being able to point out why I won 4 of them. And, you know, the answer is, you know, Bobby won 3 and Hal won 2. It's just unheard of this happening in a family at that place. The Bettenhausen, they should have, you know, and it just didn't happen. And you always wonder why. Gary had it won with Penske that year and broke, you know. So I wish I could answer that question for you.
Al, I know we barely scratched the surface of your racing career. Thank you for all of the great memories, and thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here on The Dirt Show.
Well, I appreciate you calling me, and I really appreciate being able to talk to you and try to answer. I hope you and your people listen, understand what we just talked about. Because it's a neat life and a great, great profession. Thank you.
The National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is the only museum in the world that's solely dedicated to sprint car racing. Located in Knoxville, Iowa, next to the world-famous Knoxville Raceway, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open year-round for race fans to come in and learn more about sprint car racing. You'll see 30 to 35 race cars on display that are constantly changing throughout the year. In addition, you'll find memorabilia, historic race shops, and racing videos inside the museum next to the sprint cars. There's a racing movie theater on the museum's second floor, all of the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame inductees' plaques and stories on display, a panoramic view of Knoxville Raceway, and the world's largest sprint car retail store, all at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville, Iowa.
If you have a vehicle accident, go with a professional. Bob and his staff at Midwest Collision are the definition of professionals. For over 43 years, they have dedicated their lives to collision repair along with the training, knowledge, and skills that come with the job. Go with the pros. Midwest Collision in Faribault, 507-332-2434. You bend them, we mend them. Midwest Collision.
In a world where precision and strength unite, Rhino Ag leads the pack in land management excellence. For nearly a century, Rhino Ag has been a leader of innovation, empowering farmers and land managers to conquer new frontiers. With state-of-the-art implements crafted to work as hard as you do, Rhino Ag helps you execute land development efficiently and allows you to get back to the things you love. Rhino Ag, born to lead.
At Arrow Race Wheels, they put their customers first and appreciate the loyalty the racers have for the company. Arrow Race Wheels is willing to work with anyone who has a question or problem. The only way to stay on top is to listen to the people putting us there. If you want to run with the winners, see AeroRacingWheels.com or call 888-895-2376 today.
Here's one of the most incredible lubricating products ever made, Justice Brothers JB80. It's twice as good at lubricating just about everything around the home, shop, and your car. JB80 has a penetrating action that goes straight to the problem areas and even the tightest places. Try JB80, the incredible spray lubricant that's twice as good. And it's guaranteed to satisfy or your money back.
See our display at Runnings.
Tell them Ed Justice Jr. sent you.
Foamcraft Packaging can manufacture custom protective packaging using a variety of materials to meet your specifications. Hi, this is Holly. Let our professional staff design, engineer, and manufacture a packaging solution that fits your needs and budget. Case inserts, foam end caps, bulk foam to a variety of wood pallets and crates that can be certified for international shipping. Contact Foamcraft Packaging today, 507-455-2893, or see foamcraftpackaging.com, your one-source solution for packaging.
Since 1997, Weir's Machine has been innovating the finest products in the racing industry. We also manufacture the Ultra Force load machines and develop the Ultra Force suspension software, which allows you to take your program to the next level. Be sure to check out the all-new Circle Track app, your ultimate go-to spot for race team information. Keep track of your maintenance schedule, parts list, car setups, and more. Proudly made in the USA, champions across the country choose Weir's Machine, Ultra Force, and the Circle Track app to take them to victory lane. Shop now at Weir'sMachine.com, UltraForceTech.com, and the all-new CircleTrackApp.com. Follow us on all of our social media platforms at Weir's Machine.
It's fall in Minnesota, and that means bugs are looking for warm places to hide as they seek shelter from the cold, rain, and snow. That's when it's time to call Wolf & Sons Yard Service. Before you start seeing signs of box elder bugs or Asian multicolored lady beetles, have the perimeter of your home sprayed before they start taking up residence under your siding and in your window frames. Call the professionals at Wolf & Sons Lawn Service today to keep those fall pests away at 455-3524. That's 455-3524.
Welcome back to our special segment here on The Dirt Show. And as always, I'm joined by Speed the Sauce Man from Cookies Barbecue Sauces and Seasonings. And Speed, a little history for the listeners on yourself. You raced back in the day. You also built racing engines before you bought Cookies Barbecue Sauces and Seasonings. And you've been a huge supporter of racing and races throughout the region.
Well, I'll tell you what, Clay, it's been a fun go. I hit the big 86 this year, but I drove dirt track, just stock cars, dirt track back in the late 60s and early 70s. And then when my son was running his modified on Sponsors and Mechanics Night, I would drive that up until I turned 65. And then when I hit 65, I thought, you know, those corners come up pretty fast, and I just thought before I wreck one of his cars, why, I'd step back out of it. But I'll tell you what, I've met a lot of great people through racing. Both we've fed with the Cookies Rib Wagon in the NASCAR pits down at Charlotte and also down at Kansas Speedway several times for ARCA as well as NASCAR down there. And just met a lot of the drivers and the teams. And I guess I can remember back when I was racing, playing what was great. You know, if you'd break down or your competitor would break down, you'd do all you could to help them get going so they could race against you. You know, somebody needed a water pump or fuel pump or whatever you had or a couple of tires, why, you'd give them to them so they'd be able to race against you. And I guess a lot of those friendships have lasted throughout the years, Clay.
And speaking of throughout the years, over the past many years, you have taught us some great cooking recipes to impress our friends out at the campgrounds and racetracks while we're tailgating. And if you have somebody who is a novice cook to an expert cook on your Christmas list, you've got some great gift ideas from Cookies.
Yeah, we do, Clay. And I'll tell you what, you know, with the holidays coming up and stuff, we've got the Cookies gift pack, which is really nice for everybody and anybody. I mean, it's got our seasoning in it and four of the sauces, and that you can just order right online at cookingbbq.com. And, of course, also the cookbook that's got gobs of recipes in it. And on those cookbooks, when you order it, if you'd like an autograph, just make a note in there that you would like to have an autograph, and I'll be more than happy to do that. And just, again, just go to cookies, cookiesbbq.com, and the cookbooks and the gift packs are right there on that website, and you'll make a lot of people happy for the holidays. And like I say, if you'd like to have an autograph, just mention it. I'll be more than happy to do it for all your listeners out there, Clayne.
Speed, thanks for all you do, and thanks for all you continue to do.
You betcha. Thanks to all your listeners out there for the support throughout the year, and we'll be talking to you again next year.
If you're in need of a worry-free power lift door, then you'll want to stop and talk with Rod French. Make a statement with a power lift architectural door on your home or cabin. Power lift doors can be retrofitted to fit an existing door opening or designed into your next commercial, agricultural, livestock, or aircraft hangar build. Stylish, functional, and built to last. Power lift doors by French's Manufacturing are made locally in Dodge Center, Minnesota by their experienced craftsmen. Contact Kelly or Rod. Power lift doors by French's Manufacturing. 374-9306.
Hi, this is Steve from Poles Electric. Do you have electrical projects in your future? Poles Electric can help. Poles Electric offers industrial, commercial, farm, and residential electrical services in Minnesota and northern Iowa. We have 24-hour emergency service, design build, automation, underground boring, solar installation, and much more. Poles Electric has a great staff and can assist you with your electrical needs. Look us up at ColesElectric.com or call us at 507-451-1387.
Let me tell you, friends, about our store. It's a great place we call Miner's Outdoor.
Miner's Outdoor, your total source Husqvarna dealer in Blooming Prairie, has everything your yard needs. From chainsaws, leaf blowers, and weed trimmers to zero-turn mowers and everything in between. That's what being your Husqvarna total source dealer is all about. Stop in today to see the best selection in quality Husqvarna outdoor power equipment. That's Miner's Outdoor, Highway 218, Blooming Prairie.
Miner's Outdoor, Major Tough. Napa!
With harvest season in full swing, keep your equipment running smoothly by checking and maintaining your hydraulic hoses. Napa Auto Parts stores carry top quality, premium hydraulic hoses made to size while you wait. We also carry the filters and fluids to go with them. Stop by your local Napa Auto Parts to learn more. Let Napa help you get back in the field faster this harvest season. Restrictions may apply. See store for details.
It's Pete the Sauce Man here, bringing you today's weather forecast. Okay, who am I kidding? It's always barbecue weather. Whether you're cooking on your smoker, grill, or inside your kitchen, there's a 100% chance of deliciousness when you use Cookies barbecue sauces and seasoning. You can always count on our full line of Cookies products to enhance meats, main dishes, and so much more. Get recipes and join our sauce squad at cookiesbbq.com. And remember, rain or shine, it's Cookies barbecue time.
Cookies is the one.
With Napa Premium Performance Conventional Motor Oil, you can trust your car to run smoothly year-round. This premium oil is packed with durable additives that exceed industry standards, plus it fights wear, sludge, and buildup, and our anti-wear additives stay in the oil longer for lasting protection. It's on sale now at Napa Auto Parts for just $16.59 for a 5-quart jug. For reliable performance and all-around protection, choose Napa Premium Performance Conventional Motor Oil. Your engine will thank you. Offer ends 10/31/24. See stores for details.
The difference between a Hinchman fire suit and others? The difference is safety. All Hinchman fire suits are made with materials that are permanently fire resistant. That's why Nomex remains the standard. The difference is experience and innovation. Hinchman started the racing suit industry over 80 years ago. The difference is quality, value, and customer service. Your suit is an investment in your safety. And Hinchman is committed to giving you the safest and best racing suit along with friendly personal service. Hinchman, why settle for anything less?
Deer Creek Speedway is closed for the season. Thank you to all the fans, sponsors, and drivers for your support. Shop online for all that cool Deer Creek Speedway gear that your friends and family will appreciate this holiday season. Deer Creek Speedway will host their annual banquet Saturday night, December 14th at the Eagles in Rochester. Watch DeerCreekSpeedway.com for the upcoming 2025 racing schedule, and we'll see you at the Indoor Car Show at Rochester Chevrolet in the spring of 25.
Fast Shafts is the premier manufacturer of performance drive shafts for race teams around the country. They're the title sponsor of the Fast Shafts All-Star Invitational at the IMCA Super Nationals and also support a number of competitive series nationwide. When you need a drive shaft, rear end parts, or yokes, purchase race-proven products from Fast Shafts, building drive shafts for 90% of the major chassis builders. Buy direct from a Fast Shaft dealer nationwide or call 800-622-6617 or online at fastshafts.com.
Hi, this is Harvey West, and you've been listening to The Dirt Show. See you at the races.